Welcome to this week's Dude Therapist episode. I'm so honored to have my amazing wife, Ariella, finally on the podcast talking about our journey with infertility. You guys have heard me talk about it a lot and enough, so I want to have a different voice about it. So, Ariella, can you introduce us to yourself and what you do and who you are?
Sure. Hi, everyone. Thanks for being such avid listeners of my wonderful husband, Ellie's podcast. This is a huge passion and dream of his. So I'm very honored to be on this podcast, and I want to thank you all for listening because I know it brings him so much joy. But enough about that, and I guess I'll talk about myself, which I hate doing, but alas. My name is Ariella. I'm 27. I'm a dietitian at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. I am a wife and a mother of an amazing, curious, silly, yummy 18-month-old. And that's just about as much as relevant and as needed to move forward in this conversation.
It's a lot of things. And yes, they know who she is, the Rickster, the amazing Rickster that we talk about a lot on this podcast and on Elevation and any other way. But today we're going to talk about a hard topic, something that's not so easy to talk about, but my wife and I are very open about, which is our infertility journey. Can you kind of give the listeners a little background from your perspective, what that journey was like, and get in as much detail as you want, or talk as long as you want? We have all the time in the world.
Sure. Okay. So I think I want to start at the beginning because I think that gives a little bit of perspective as to why Ellie and I are both so open about our infertility journey. And really, it just starts with the fact that when we got married, we weren't really thinking about having kids just yet because we were both in school. But we sort of saw and heard these little murmurings about acquaintances or people in the community that we heard were going through infertility, whether it was because they were involved in an organization called Yesh Tikva, which supports community members dealing with infertility and providing support, or just friends posting about it, being open about it. So I was kind of aware that this was a thing. I shouldn't take getting pregnant for granted. And I became very sensitive about it. And I had this, you know, it had a special place in my heart, that sensitivity about it. And even before we started trying, a friend of ours actually came up to us and let us know that they were expecting, but also were open with us that they had some struggles getting pregnant. I don't even know if this person knows how valuable that conversation was to me. I have spoken about our infertility journey with her, but it was just so huge for me because I knew that even though we didn't know what our fertility journey would look like just yet, that if I started going through something or if I hit a bump in the road, I knew I had someone I could talk to, someone who could potentially relate to that struggle. And then, you know, as we started realizing that it wasn't going to be as easy as we thought, you know, we again were faced with a panel about infertility by this organization called Yesh Tikva. In our community, you know, some of the members of our community were very open and vulnerable and put themselves out there and described their infertility journey. And it was so powerful because it was just at the beginning of when we realized things were not going to go as planned. And when, you know, I had actually just scheduled an appointment with a reproductive endocrinologist. So it was a good introduction to the fact that there are people who go through this. Thankfully, the three couples had children. So I knew there was hope, even in the dark journey that we were potentially about to face. So that was just huge to get the journey started. You know, some people, they start this journey and they know no one who has gone through it and they don't know who to turn to and they don't know who to turn to for support, or just ask questions about what to ask their reproductive endocrinologist. They had no one to turn to. And I was very thankful that at the beginning of our journey, we already had a few names that we knew we could reach out to if we had issues. So for me, I'll be very open and honest. I suspected for a while that I had something called PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. And I don't need to go through the science and biology of it, but essentially for women with PCOS, it can be very difficult to lose weight.
And very common.
Yes, it is a very common condition. My mom had it, so I had a feeling that I would have it. It is genetic. And so I went to a gynecologist. I was diagnosed, so I knew, you know, some of our fertility issues were very likely related to me. So we decided really not to wait any longer. You know, most reproductive endocrinologists won't see you for a year. But with a diagnosis like PCOS, I said, you know, I'm not going to just sit and wait. I want a baby so badly. We had wanted this for so long. We had pushed it off just because we wanted to be responsible, but it didn't take away from the fact that we really wanted this so badly. So I didn't want to lose any more time. So I went to a reproductive endocrinologist, and he was wonderful. He described what we could do to start, some diagnostic tests we would go through. So we did all that. We proceeded. And they actually ended up finding something that was really crucial on one of my diagnostic tests, which was that I had a septum in my uterus. I'm being open and honest about this because I had no idea what that meant. And for me, I kind of really saw it as a sign from God, I guess, or some little light among this journey, even though it's a horrible thing to have. If you have a septum, just to kind of put it very simply, it could very likely lead to a miscarriage. And for me, I couldn't even get pregnant at that point. So the fact that I found it before, you know, I had, God forbid, a miscarriage, which again is very common and very normal, but on top of having a very difficult road to just getting pregnant, I was very thankful that we found that so that before we started any intervention, we found that out. I was able to have it removed so that I would be able to know that I could carry whatever pregnancy I had. So that was, you know, crucial. And I was so happy and relieved that they figured that out and found that. And then we could proceed with our journey.
They also did testing on me as well.
Right. Right.
One of the things that, you know, I think is a misconception is that when I heard PCOS and, oh, it's going to be Ariel's issue. I didn't also realize that I was, stupidly enough, I'm part of the equation as well. And I did. And I, it was a big eye opener for me. And we'll get into more details afterwards, of course, of Arielle's journey through this all, because she was the one who took the brunt of everything because she's the one who can get pregnant and I can't. But from a mental health perspective, for me, I know the effects it had on me as a guy, as a man, not being able or having that label of infertile or having infertility issues. How is that for you as a Jewish woman? Yeah. When the pressure is so high, mm-hmm. in the Jewish community to have a family. And on top of that, just as a woman in general, and the passion and fire that it creates anyways, for having the ability of having children and a family. What was that like for you? The beginning thoughts of those conversations, mm-hmm. with the specialist, mm-hmm. and learning about my issues, mm-hmm. and learning about your issues. Yeah. How did it kind of play with your head a little bit?
I think, you know, it's a hard question. Just because I'd like to think that I'm a strong person. And, you know, again, given the fact that I had heard about infertility, I had heard about male infertility as well. So I knew it likely wasn't entirely my issue. I mean, when I first found out I had PCOS, I think it was, you know, a little bit upsetting, just because like you said, it is hard to feel like your role as a woman and your role as a wife, especially, you know, raised in an Orthodox Jewish community where it's expected that you have children. But even regardless of the expectations, I have always loved kids. I worked and, you know, I started working at my shul or synagogue youth groups, working with kids 1.5 to 3 years old when I was 11. I just loved working with the kids. I worked there from 11 till I was 18. So I always knew I wanted to have kids. I always knew I was good with kids. So yeah, it was definitely hard to feel like what's going to happen. But again, the reason why I brought up the beginning of my journey was that because I had people who were open and vulnerable and shared their infertility journeys, I knew that it wasn't the end for me. And I knew it was common. And I knew that it meant there was nothing wrong with me. So again, I think it's so powerful to have people who are open about it, because I think it saved me from feeling like a total epic failure of a woman, of a wife, of a, you know, supposed to be mother. So I really thankfully didn't struggle with those thoughts too much. I think there were a little bit of, you know, inklings and rumblings of that feeling of failure. But for the most part, you know, I kept reminding myself, you know, I don't look at all these other women as failure. So why should I view myself as that? So I think that was really amazing. And again, that's why we try to be so open about that, because we had that for ourselves. We want to do that for others and pass it along.
You know, the reason why I wanted to have you on, I've never heard you say that before. And I'm smiling right now. I'm very happy and I'm getting emotional because it's very nice to hear that you felt that way and that you didn't lose hope because you wouldn't look at others thinking they had a failure. Why would you do that to yourself? I think we do that a lot. And we talk about that a lot on the Dude Therapist and on my page a lot. And we talk about that personally, about that idea of that critical voice telling us that we're failures, or, and if we just looked around just a little bit to see that other people are going through similar things or could have gone through similar things, that they're not failures, we don't judge them. Why do we always judge ourselves that way? And I think, you know, I noticed, I'm going to talk about the relationship stuff in a second and something that, you know, about between us and how you felt either we did a good job or maybe things that we can kind of enlighten for others to maybe be aware of the downfalls or struggles in a relationship when going through infertility. But I think the change that happened for me is it got really real when we started doing all the shots. Because before it was like, first of all, the mathematics of and the statistics of getting pregnant in a quote unquote healthy or fertile couple is ridiculous and really made me truly believe in God a lot more. It really boosted my faith that it's just an amazing, miraculous process. But on top of it, when we started getting down to the nitty gritty of the shots and the early morning things, and I know you took the huge brunt of it all. You're nodding your head and like, yeah, I did. How was that going through all those things? Because for me, that's what made it really real. And to see, and I was the one who was administering the shots because you're not so good at needles and it was in awkward positions in your you know, your butt or in your, or your belly or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Was that like the realness for you at that point? Or was it something that was a different point for you?
I think the time at which it hit me the most was when our first trial of Clomid, you know, the medication to see if that could help me ovulate, failed. I think that was the point at which it really hit me. I remember it was the day before Shavuot, one of the Jewish holidays. And it was a holiday where, you know, you see a lot of people in synagogue or shul. And I had this expectation that I had graduated. It was right after my graduation from my master's program. So it felt like, okay, now we could get started with this. At least this will work. And I remember coming home from the doctor and just crying my eyes out for hours and hours, crying at the fertility clinic. And having to have the nurses bring me a box of tissues, which I'm sure they're used to, and the nurses are wonderful there. But I think that the point, I feel like as long as I thought that there could be a medication that could help, I would be okay with my situation, because I had heard of Clomid or letrozole working for people with PCOS, which is much less invasive. But once I heard the doctor say that he really felt that IVF was going to get us a more successful journey sooner. I'm not really saying that right, so I apologize. That at that point it really hit me that this is the real deal. And then again, once you start with the shots, it was definitely very scary.
How many months of the shots were there?
We started the shots in June.
That
was for the egg retrieval. So that started like the second week of June. And then I was having shots, you know, at least every other week through the end of September, when we finally had our transfer. Of course there were on and off weeks, but yeah, the egg retrieval was probably the roughest part of the journey for me, just because you get so bloated. And I had already gotten a few comments over the years saying like, if I gained 2 pounds, of people saying, oh, congratulations, or, oh, what are you expecting? And, you know, as a dietitian, it can be very upsetting to hear that, just because I feel like, you know, coming from a profession where people expect you to be thin or look a certain way because you know, according to their perception of what a dietitian does, all you do is tell people what to eat and how to lose weight, which is not what I do at all, but that's what people perceive of dietitians. So on top of the fact that I had already gotten comments over the last year, to then be injecting myself with shots in my stomach that made me look extremely bloated, it was very difficult. I didn't want to go out. I was very worried about what people would say. And the egg retrieval was rough. I remember waking up. I was in a lot of pain. There was so much pressure. I got home and we actually had signed up to make a meal for a friend of ours who had given birth. So that just like added to the emotional weight of that day. It's not our friend's fault. You know, we could have rescheduled, but we had signed up, you know, a month before, you know, with, I think a lot of what people don't realize with your infertility and these appointments and these transfers and the retrievals that you really don't have a lot of autonomy over when it happens. A lot of it is you go for daily monitoring. So oftentimes at 6 a.m., 7 a.m., if you're working, which at that point I was kind of transitioning. I was starting a new role at a new hospital, but I was late a few times for work. I had to get up at 5 o'clock to make it on time for my appointments to get to work. But yeah, so you really don't have a lot of autonomy. So I had no idea that this egg retrieval was going to fall out on a day that we had signed up to make someone a meal, but I knew that it was important. I knew they were relying on us. So I had, you know, we cooked it in the morning. We went to the retrieval. We came back. We delivered the meal. And I just cried my eyes out.
I remember that.
Thinking like, no one knows what I just went through today. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the hardest parts with an egg retrieval and a transfer leading up to it is, you know, you don't ask people or you don't tell people when you're planning to, you know, the night you're planning to conceive. So it just kind of feels wrong to tell people that you're about to have a transfer or you're about to have an egg retrieval. But at the same time, it's a really difficult time. It's a time where you know, you're emotionally exhausted, you're physically exhausted, you're being injected with all these hormones. But you know, there's no meal train for someone going through an egg retrieval. And it's not to say that no one would help you if you reached out, but it just feels so weird to say something. You know, we've been open about this whole journey this whole time. And we told people we were going to potentially have to go do IVF, but it still felt weird to tell people
like
this week.
Day.
Yeah, we're going through this. So that's the hardest part is there are certain points that even if you're very open and very good at asking for help, there's still times where it is a little hard to ask for help.
Yeah. And the interesting thing that I had, I remember that day very vividly. I remember your emotion and I struggle as a guy, as like a male. I know I'm your husband. I know I'm always there for you, but it was very hard for me to be there for you during these hard times. You know, whether if I was at work and I couldn't be at an appointment, I remember when the first transfer failed and I was at work and you were home.
I was actually at work that
day. You were at work.
Oh,
you were
I was at work.
You were at work. And then you got home and I was still at work.
Yeah.
And you were a mess.
Yeah.
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
And I couldn't be there for you physically. And sometimes I didn't know how to be there for you emotionally.
Yeah.
And I was very thankful that you had support other than me. And it sometimes is a hard balance for a husband to not be able to be there for their wife who's going through that. And, you know, the relationship stuff definitely can take a toll.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ups and downs of emotions, feelings of I call it a sense of grief, of a loss, of potential of a family. Mm-hmm. And what do you think were the successes that we kind of can share? The good things that we did as a couple?
Mm-hmm.
Not to brag or be like couple goals. It's not our thing at all. Mm-hmm. No hashtag couple goals over here. But truly just to enlighten maybe some of the listeners who are going through this and are worried that if they go through infertility, this is the end of our relationship. What are some good things we did and maybe some things that weren't as helpful or some things that we could have done better?
Yeah, I think one of the most helpful things during our journey was after the first transfer failed, we took a trip to Rhode Island, to Newport.
We did.
And it was actually...
Now if you saw all those pictures, you know, now you know timing-wise.
Yeah. It was actually a really fun week. Sunday, we actually went to Candytopia, which was this really fun Instagram candy world.
Your Instagram wife came out.
And then the next day I went straight from work. We went to Rhode Island for like a day and a half or 2 days. It was actually also like so much transition going on. I had just been offered a temporary position at Memorial Sloan Kettering, which is where I did my internship. So I had decided to leave my per diem role at the other hospital I was working at. And they were like, oh, we need you to, you know, since you won't reach your max days, we want you to work this and this. So I literally only had, you know, I think Tuesday and Wednesday to take off. And then I was working Thursday, Friday, and then I was starting my new position the next week. So we took advantage. We said, you know what, we really need to get away, just the two of us, reconnect, have a good time. And it was really fun. We really had a good time just to get away from the June, July, half of August of dealing with, you know, this whole process, and just spend time, the two of us. So I think that's something that I think is really helpful. Just, you know, if you're going through infertility, to at some point just pause and just spend time with your significant other to reconnect, to talk about what you're going through, to talk about how you're feeling, or just to distract yourself and have some fun.
And I also think one of the biggest things that we were being there for each other. I know for me, one of the big successes that we were there for each other. I know for you, I didn't do this so well sometimes, I'll admit that, without judgment or frustration, yeah, with being upset that another friend is pregnant, yeah, or another friend is having a kid, or the emotions of it happened again, or I don't want these shots and I don't want this and I don't want that. I don't, you know, and the pain and the suffering and the struggle in the early mornings. And, you know, we had to do a transfer on Sabbath and all the weird things that we had to do and the questions we had to ask our rabbinic figures in our lives. But we were there for each other with no resentment, anger, frustration, judgment. And I think the biggest thing was that I can say for me, what helped me be more understanding was that it was also my problem as well. It wasn't right. just yours regarding the label of being infertile, yeah, but we were kind of in this together. Mm-hmm. And that kind of helped me give perspective that, oh no, this is also, we're part of this. This is our thing because we both want to have a family.
Yeah.
We're both struggling with this, but we needed each other.
Yeah.
And I think that was very helpful. And that trip, I remember that summer was a blur. And then the next summer was a blur because we had Ricky.
Yeah.
So basically we lost two summers, yeah, but that was a great trip because it kind of helped us reconnect and we had amazing acai bowls. I still dream about them.
Yeah.
And great views and great tours and we had a wonderful time. Too many rich people's mansions that we saw in Newport.
It was fun.
It was very fun. But I think it was really nice for us. So that was a really good success. What are some things, any more successes or things you want to talk about?
Well, I think, you know, it's huge that you were able to help give me my shots.
I wasn't really scared about that.
Yeah, I think there are so many women out there who either have to get over it and do it themselves.
Their husband's working.
Or in addition to having to go for early monitoring, they have to go to a nurse who will do it for them. So I think it was super huge that I could rely on you for that.
Sometimes I didn't do a great job and hurt you sometimes.
Yeah, no, and I know it wasn't easy for you either. I know it was hard to think that you might be hurting me because there were times where even if you did it, you do a shot perfectly, it's still a shot.
And stuff,
it's still in
your
butt.
The stuff was hurting.
Yeah, and you get really sore after.
I think it helped that I have Crohn's and that I had to give myself shots for my Crohn's. So give it to myself. I was scared enough. Give it to someone that I knew would help them. It was a weird feeling.
I definitely would not have been able to do it myself. So it was huge that you were able to help me do that. Some of the negatives, there weren't so many negatives, but I think there were times where it was difficult for either one or both of us when a friend would tell us they were expecting and we were in the middle of what we were going through, or even while I was pregnant, when a friend would tell me that they were expecting, you know, their second
or third,
it kind of felt like, are you kidding me? Like, we're finally catching up. And, you know, now, you know, it was hard. There were times where I would say, listen, I'm so happy for them. But then I would break down in tears and feel like, I don't know, I feel like it's finally my turn. And obviously, I'm so happy for them. It's just a huge mix of emotions. It's not rational. It's just emotional. It's like this trigger. So it's hard. There were some times where, you know, you were trying to be super happy for our friends and I wasn't quite there yet. And there was one time where
I remember that
I just
lost it. So. And I couldn't be there because I was trying to be supportive for our friends and be so happy for them. But at the same time, I didn't know how to be supportive for Ariella because I had that balance of like,
yeah,
my mind. I'm trying to be positive and be hopeful because I saw how upset she was and if you can ask Ariella, usually she plays that role mostly in our marriage of being the positive, hopeful, optimistic one. Yeah. And I was trying to be that because she was struggling and it didn't kind of, it backfired a little bit. What are some things maybe that we can kind of enlighten on some worries or maybe concerns that someone should be aware of going into infertility for couples?
That's a difficult one. I think it just communication with your partner, just expressing yourself, expressing what you're feeling, expressing what you may need, the other partner trying their best to stay in tune with what you need, because sometimes you can express it. And it's often hard, especially for male, female, women are oftentimes kind of have expectations and men don't necessarily know that they're women are expecting them to read their minds. So sometimes it's good for the husband to maybe seek out other husbands and what have been helpful for their wives, just to see what they can do to help. Other than that, take some time to get away, you know, choose some comfort food when you're having a difficult time. I know it's coming from a dietitian. Food is, you know, it's not, you shouldn't be binging on comfort food, but there's something nice about a really yummy milkshake when you're after a retrieval or something. Or, you know, sometimes right before you can't really necessarily have a massage in between what you're going through. So if you have like those times in between a retrieval and a transfer, go get yourself a massage while you still can. But don't you see yourself as a failure. You're not. People go through it. And just be there for each other, I guess. To sum it up.
So now that we talked about the relationship stuff a little bit and delved into that, I want to get back into the journey because I remember your emotions the day that the transfer didn't work.
Yeah.
And it was really hard for me to watch and experience there with you. I know I dealt with it my own way and you dealt with it with your way. And I want, at the end, we'll get into some supports that you have found maybe on social media and some Facebook groups that you can kind of suggest. But right now, how was it mentally then? Like getting back into it, like recharging to do the second time around when you experienced the first round not working. Mm-hmm. And how did you kind of get your mind ready for that?
Yeah, that's a great question.
I know you did acupuncture and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You did stuff for your body.
Yeah. So I did acupuncture throughout most of my journey. I had an amazing acupuncturist. You can DM Ellie for the information. She used to be in Manhattan. Now she's out of the five towns. I guess I'll just say her name. Her name is Miriam Pinellas. She is wonderful. She is an amazing acupuncturist who specializes in infertility or reproductive health, I should say. And I actually met with her before the egg retrieval. So I was seeing her throughout and she's just amazing. And she provided an amazing, emotional support as well as providing the acupuncture treatment. So I actually went to her like a few days after we found out the first transfer didn't work. And she, you know, one of the things she said to me was she gave me, I don't really know the terms with acupuncture, Eastern medicine, but she essentially did you put the needles in a place where it was going to give me emotional healing. And I don't know if it's psychological or, I mean, I really believe this stuff works. And I really felt so good after it. I cried to her before starting. I cried when the needles were in me and then I just napped, which is what most people do during acupuncture. And I really felt emotionally recharged after. But then after that, again, we went on our trip, and then I posted in one of the infertility support groups that I was a part of, which was super helpful throughout each step of my journey. Friend had added me to it. It's a private group, so I don't even know what it's called. It's like infertility and pregnancy loss in the Jewish community. So there are a few friends of mine that I had in there. So sometimes it was a little uncomfortable because I didn't want it to seem like I was reaching out to a public group before reaching out to my friends, but it was really honestly a good way for me to put it out there and without having to text an individual friend, listen, this is what just happened, because sometimes it can be a little awkward to say, hi, by the way, I just had a failed transfer. Sometimes it's just awkward to like bring that up. But when you put it out there, then a few people reached out to me saying, I'm so sorry. How can I help? What can I do? So I got some tips about what to ask my reproductive endocrinologist about, what we could do different next time. You know, what foods I could eat, even though there's not really much research with that.
Is that what convinced you to do the genetic testing?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think after posting that, I said I hadn't done it before, you know, do people recommend? I obviously also discussed all this with my reproductive endocrinologist before getting ready for the next transfer. We discussed together what could work better next time. And one of them was doing genetic screening, which we had initially said, you know what, we had done our own genetic screening and we knew there was nothing, you know, that we could pass on together to our children based on what we found. But, you know, there's always these chromosomal abnormalities that you can't control. So we didn't know if that would be the cause. So we did that. But a few people gave me some good tips. And, you know, again, going away helped me recharge. Starting a new job helped distract me a little bit and have something to look forward to, going back to a hospital that I loved working at. Reconnecting with my former preceptors who are now my colleagues. And then just thinking, okay, maybe this will work this time. I have hope. I actually, with a friend of mine, I had opened up to her what we went through, and we decided together that we were going to split Psalms or Tehillim. She was actually single and was, you know, had been struggling with dating for a while. So we decided I would pray for her and she would pray for me, and my transfer worked, and she
is now happily married.
Reconnecting with a guy she previously went out with. They ended up getting engaged, you know, 4 months after that. So that was helpful. You know, I just tried every avenue, you know, spiritual, physical, mental, emotional, to get ready again. But I knew I wanted this baby, and that was what it came down to. So I said, the bottom line is I'm sad because I don't have what I want. So what can I do to get what I want is pick myself back up again and get ready for the second round.
This is why I had you on, because you have such a great outlook on this. I know a lot of people would be crushed by this. It might not be as positive or hopeful. I know we had our moments,
yeah,
of being really down and in despair and in darkness. When the transfer finally worked, and I remember that even when you were pregnant, which you were adorable and you were cute as a pregnant woman, and you love being pregnant,
yeah,
and you enjoyed the process, and thank God you had a very quote unquote easy pregnancy, because
mm-hmm.
There are a lot of things that can go on. There was still, I felt in my own head, a lot of stress just being pregnant, because we had the infertility, yeah, and because, oh no,
yeah,
we lost a transfer, mm-hmm, once. I don't know what to think about. How was that for you? Going through that, you actually going through the loss of, yeah, the transfer and now being pregnant, how are those feelings?
Yeah, I think I had anxiety the entire pregnancy about, you know, worrying if there would be a miscarriage. The first transfer, there were probably a lot of reasons that it didn't work that were totally unrelated to reasons why someone might have a miscarriage, which hopefully we fix, and hopefully the next one will work nicely. But again, there's still, you know, even if you don't go through infertility, I think knowing that miscarriages can happen, it can give you a lot of anxiety, especially if you have gone through a miscarriage. And so I don't think I felt secure the entire time.
Until I held Ricky.
I think what was helpful was knowing that I was, for the first 3 months, I was doing the progesterone shots, which are supposed to help keep your levels up to prevent a miscarriage. So I felt, even though I hated those shots, I like when it was like week 11 or 12 where they say you could stop doing that, I did until week 13, just because I was like, I like knowing that I'm doing something actively that will help me maintain my pregnancy. So I think once the 13 weeks of shots were over, even though it was a huge celebration, it was December, we had been doing on and off shots for basically 6 months. I still felt very insecure. And I think between each doctor's appointments, as I got closer to my next one, I would get more fearful because it had been 3 weeks or 2 months, or I don't even remember the time frame in between each appointment, but it had been so long since my last appointment. So I didn't know if there was still a heartbeat, God forbid if it was lost or whatever. So then after each doctor's appointment, when he said there's a heartbeat, everything looks good, I felt like I could breathe. And then I would go through it over again until the next appointment. But I think, again, part of the reason why, even though I was pregnant, it was difficult to hear that other friends were pregnant was, again, because I also, even though I finally was pregnant, I didn't know if, God forbid, something would happen. Things happen all the time. And it's so scary when, you know, you have friends who go through early miscarriages, late term miscarriages, stillbirths. It's awful and it's horrifying. And I apologize if this is a trigger for anyone. So I really didn't feel secure. I felt anxious almost the entire time. And then you've heard the story of Ricky's birth. We lost her heartbeat for a good minute there. There was a moment.
Can you repeat to everyone what you said to yourself when kind of things hit the fan during that moment?
I said, I did not come this far to walk away without a baby.
That's a warrior mother right there. That's motherhood right there.
Yeah. But I, you know, there's only so much I could do. Yeah. I had no idea. I had, you know, I was, you know, shaking, I was crying, but I, you know,
so was even, I.
when the doctors were rushing me in, I think they were mostly residents. I said, I remember like trying to hold it together because I knew I had to breathe. You know, my daughter or my baby, I didn't know if it was going to be a boy or a girl. My baby doesn't have a heartbeat. It's not going to do the baby any good if I'm not breathing. So I have to breathe. But in between sobs and trying to collect myself, I said to the doctor, I'm like, does this happen? Like, am I going to be okay? And obviously the doctors are doctors, so they know that they can't promise anything, but they're like, we deal with this. You know, this has happened before. So they're up until, you know, an hour before she was born, I didn't know if things were going to go okay. So I think it is very normal when you're going through infertility to not take a second of your pregnancy for granted and be anxious until you are holding your baby.
And then I want to talk about something that we've discussed a lot that, and maybe this might rub people the wrong way, but now that we have Ricky, do you think that our love or maybe appreciation or joy or obsession with her can be because of the journey that we went through? Do you think that might have changed our mentality about it?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's not for us to say, you know,
we don't think that we love our children any more than anyone else loves their children.
No, I'm saying there's no way for me to know exactly how a person feels about each pregnancy. I know that I've heard of people or stories about people or even just movies or TV shows, which obviously aren't realistic, but they're usually based on some truth of people who they have a whoops pregnancy or, you know, they're not on birth control, so they have another pregnancy, and it's like, I don't know if we're ready for this. But I think, you know, as you grow a baby in your belly for 9 months, you have a love for them. But I do feel like, you know, we really, you know, I don't know, we just look at her every day and just appreciate her. And I can't speak for other parents and say that we appreciate our baby more. But yeah, it could be that we have more of a just like wow level of like,
This happened.
Like, we worked so hard to get here. And, you know, and just in that way, I guess, like, we're just like how much effort we put into where we got her. But obviously, you know, every child should be loved and loved no matter what
the journey, you know, was.
What the journey was to get get to your baby.
And I think, you know, in the beginning of it, I think the misconception that a lot of married couples have is that it is just a simple conception to birth. And I think it was a very big eye opener for me that it's really difficult.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And,
yeah,
you know, as we get more involved in this community, as we tell our story more, and as we talk more to friends and family and people, we hear all these sad stories of miscarriages and stillbirths and, you know, all these very, very terrible things that happen. It truly kind of gives you perspective on the beauty of life and the power.
Yeah.
And how many miracle.
And just how many things have to go right.
Right. Perfectly
right. In order
right.
to get to a normal, healthy birth.
And that's alone is ridiculous and crazy.
It's a huge miracle.
And this might be a hard question for you to ask. Did you ever even think of, since we are a therapy podcast, did you ever think about going to therapy, or would you suggest it? And when do you think would be the point for someone to maybe look for a therapist during the infertility process?
Oh yeah. I never, it's interesting. I'm married to a therapist. I have never myself been to therapy.
And I do not therapeutize my wife. So yeah. I'm just a husband.
I definitely could benefit from therapy, and I'm definitely looking into going to therapy, just because even just being a mom is hard, besides for the fact that we went through infertility. But yeah, I definitely recommend people go to therapy. I don't want to toot my own horn here, but I am a self-aware person. I am able to, I'm not embarrassed about anything. I'm very open and vulnerable. So I talk to a lot of friends.
You did.
You know,
that was great.
You know, Ellie is an amazing husband, and because he's a therapist, but he is was more emotionally available than potentially other husbands are. Again, I can't speak for other husbands. I don't know, but there, it could be that your husband isn't as emotionally available. There are wives out there who don't know how to communicate their needs. It could be you, again, don't want to talk about it with your mm-hmm. friends or family. I was thankful that both Ellie's mom and my mom were amazing people to talk to and so supportive. So I was able to get that support from friends and family because I was willing to be open about it, that I didn't feel like I needed to seek out therapy as a first, you know, level. But definitely if you don't feel comfortable talking about it with other people, you need someone. So if a therapist is the way you prefer to go, I definitely think you need to talk about it with someone. You definitely need an outlet for it. It's hard, it's impossible to just bear it down.
I love that you brought that into it. And I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but I know that you did find amazing supports in your friends and the support groups online. Mm-hmm. Could you kind of, you don't have to mention your names of your friends, because that's not what we're here for. Maybe what are some maybe Instagram accounts or Facebook groups that people could have access to? And if you can't think of now, it'll be in the show notes. Yeah. I'll tag them in the episode. And like, I know for myself, I'm part of the PUA infertility emotional support. We're called the care team, mm-hmm. right? It's a group of therapists mm-hmm. who help. And I have found that there are so many women, thank God, reaching out mm-hmm. more than men, which is a whole nother thing, which I'll talk about in my episode about infertility from a male's perspective and my perspective going through this process. It's sad to watch that the men, they go, oh, I want to talk to someone. And I have one phone call for 15, 20 minutes, and they never want to talk again.
Yeah.
And, but the women are always more into it.
Yeah.
And I love that, because someone needs help. Someone needs to talk about it. So what were those groups that you found?
Well, again, there's this the Facebook group. It's by invite only. So I had a friend who was open with me about it. So she was able to add me. That was it for Facebook groups. You know, I was in the Yesh Tikva panel is really helpful. PUA was incredible.
Any Instagram?
I follow, you know, randomly Jenna Kutcher and Rachel Mansfield. Rachel, is a foodie. She posts some really awesome recipes. Jenna is like an Instagram guru. I found her through a different podcast, and Jenna Kutcher talked about miscarriages, and Rachel Mansfield went through infertility. So it was just totally outside my community. They weren't speaking about it. I mean, they were speaking about it, but not again. I wasn't looking for them. They just happened to be open about it. So that was great and helpful to hear their stories and their journeys. And then actually Abby Sophia Photography, she has an Instagram account. I think it's called at Abby Sophia Days. She's a photographer, incredibly talented. She was a part of this Facebook group that I was a part of, but she is very vocal about her journey with infertility. So reading her story and seeing how open she was about it was also extremely helpful for me. Right. And she doesn't, I think she knows the impact she's had, but I think it's been, you know, she really made such a huge impact on me. And then after the whole process, I found so many more Instagram accounts that I didn't even know about. But
I think it's funny that when we finally went through it and we kind of could take a step back and breathe for a second because we had Ricky, when I got more involved, oh my gosh, this person had infertility. Oh, like we're going to have someone on the show,
right?
Erin, who has an amazing infertility journey, and she's going to be on the episode after this one.
Yeah.
I didn't even know about her.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I was supposed to have a baby. I never knew about that account. And, you know, all the other accounts from even for male infertility, there's so many that I found only because I was so in tune to it. Then I searched for the
right
keywords and it kind of popped up.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I wish I knew about these before.
Yeah. But some of these are actually like, I was supposed to have a baby, I think is on the newer side, but Amy is incredible. The resources and the lives, and she hosts Zoom support groups for infertility. So I highly recommend looking her up. She's wonderful.
So to wrap up, first of all, I want to thank you for being so vulnerable and opening up about this stuff. Also, I love having an excuse to chat with you about real things and having my podcast because I admire your thought process. You are my wife and I love everything you do. What are maybe some final words you could talk about when it comes to our infertility journey and for other people to kind of hear? You gave a lot of amazing nuggets so far. So if you don't have any, that's okay.
No, one thing that I didn't get a chance to touch on that I kind of subtly touched on, but I want to highlight because it was a huge part of my journey was after the egg retrieval, I mentioned you get very bloated before and after. And I actually couldn't go to Ellie's cousin's wedding because of it. I was very uncomfortable. I couldn't fit into any dress. I literally looked like I was 6 or 7 months pregnant. And I was just like, how am I supposed to go to a wedding with family members who haven't seen me in a while? They're going to say something. And I am literally just 2 days off of an egg retrieval because I can't have a baby on my own. And that was a really hard thing to face. Now, 2 or 3 years later, I still don't have that experience of being at this cousin's wedding or seeing family, you know, being there for, you know, this family reunion. You don't see family members all that often. But I will forever have not been at that wedding because of my infertility. And I think that made a huge impact on me. And mostly it's because, you know, there's this real problem with people feeling they can comment on women's bodies. And I think that's one of the hardest parts of infertility is you go through these ups and downs with hormones and they do make you look very bloated and potentially pregnant. And it can be really difficult because you know that you are potentially opening people to comment because there are so many people.
Which is not their right.
So I'm saying because there are so many people out there who feel it is their right to ask. So I think, you know, I think there are so many Instagram people out there who have been vocal about it, who have been vocal about their personal anecdotes and stories where it's happened to help, you know, shed light that A, you're not alone if it's happened to you. There's so many people who are outspoken and just don't know that you shouldn't say something. And they are vocal about it to say, stop doing it. So I think that's one little highlight I want to bring in is just the fact that it can be really difficult on your body image to be injecting yourself with all these hormones before you even get pregnant. So it's not like you're like, oh, I gain weight because I'm pregnant. It's like, no, I gain weight because I can't get pregnant and I'm going to gain more weight on top of it. And again, I look bloated. So people are going to think I'm pregnant and they're going to say stuff to me that's going to send me home running and crying because I'm not pregnant. So I think that's one thing that was really hard for me and was a huge part of my journey, just, you know, missing that wedding and the fear of someone saying something when I was in such a vulnerable state.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Oh, and one other thing was that the day I found out that the transfer didn't work, I was working as a dietitian. I had to go, in the hallway to take the call where I found out that the transfer didn't work and I was not pregnant. And I ran out of the hospital crying. I had no tissues. I had to use my lab coat to wipe my boogers. And it was embarrassing to walk in the hospital with my, like I, when I cry, I get very blotchy. So it's not easy to hide that I was crying, but I was honest with my boss. And I said to her, listen, I essentially, you know, obviously it's not quite a miscarriage, but I just found out I'm not pregnant, even though I was supposed to be. I'm emotionally distraught. I can't really focus on work. Would it be okay if I went home? And she was so supportive and let me go home. And even though I left that job a week later and, you know, she was so supportive and I just feel like it was amazing.
Those small moments
that she had my back and let me do what I needed to do. And my Uber driver also, I took an Uber drive home and I was crying, and the guy was really nice and said, "Are you okay?" and gave me tissues. And that was just, it made such a huge difference to me on such a tough day.
Basically be sensitive to everyone around you, because you just don't know what they're going
through. Then
be kind and nice to them.
And also just ask for help. If you really feel like you can't do your work or you're not going to do a good job at work, take the time.
I love that.
You'd be surprised of how, you know, especially, I know it can be probably difficult with male bosses. I've never really had a male boss, but my female bosses have all been so supportive of each part of my journey when I've been open with them about it and told them exactly what I need. They've said, you do what you need to do.
Thank you so much for really giving such beautiful insights into it and joining me on The Dude Therapist. Hopefully we'll have you on a few more times. As always, I'll see you all next week. If you have any questions, even if you have any comments, please email me at thedudetherapist@gmail.com or DM me at thedudetherapist on Instagram. Don't forget to be kind to yourself and to everyone around you. And please tag any accounts that you might find helpful or have found helpful for infertility. Always trying to share and spread more and more amazing accounts to help more and more people. Thank you, Ariella, for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me. And feel free to text questions for me through
Ellie. She's wonderful, and she'll answer them very well.
Yeah, I love helping women who are going through the same thing.
And stay tuned till next week when you hear someone else's infertility story. All the best. See you next time. Thank you so much to listening to this week's episode of The Dude Therapist. And it only is happening because of you, the listeners, tuning in every week, even twice a week, to this show all about mental health, relationships, and wellness topics. And really, let's be honest, everything in between. And I'm so excited to show up every time and having great guests. So, thank you. And if you have any questions, concerns, ideas, collaborations, email me at thedudetherapist@gmail.com. Follow me on Instagram at thedudetherapist. Let me know what you're thinking. Let me know your ideas. I can't wait to hear from you. And if you can go along, subscribe, rate, review on all the streaming sites that you're listening on. I truly appreciate it, because that's what makes this thing happen. So thanks for tuning in this week. And see you next time on the Dude Therapist podcast, because we've got more guests and more great content coming your way.